This episode of Between the Rows was brought to you in part by Bayer. Bayer continues to make significant investments into the development of new breeding technologies and state-of-the-art cropping solutions to ensure the profitability and sustainability of your farm. This season, grow with confidence. Grow with Bayer. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Barb Duckworth of The Western Producer reports on producer group reaction to possible changes to the Canada Food Guide.
Most of us nowadays don't have any nutrition education, and sadly enough, a lot of doctors at the family practice don't have a lot of nutrition education either.
The Manitoba Cooperator's Shannon Van Rays tells us about her tour of farms in northern Manitoba.
It was a great opportunity for myself and for Keystone to just touch base and really get a feel for the area.
And Bruce Burnett of Glacier Farm Media is here with a look at the markets.
We would expect the basis to weaken a little bit as we go into the harvest season, but prices really still remain quite strong. So I would recommend at least catching up in terms of your sales progress.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Laura Rance.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. Health Canada is revising the Canada Food Guide, and it's looking like the new recommendations will put a lot more emphasis on plant-based protein. In fact, meat isn't even mentioned in the guiding principles released by the department earlier this year. That's making livestock producers a little nervous. The Western Producer's Barb Duckworth has been following the story. She's with us now to bring us up to date. Hi, Barb.
Hi, Laura.
So, Barb, what are you hearing about the new food guide as it relates to the consumption of meat and dairy?
What we've been told so far is they're looking at more emphasis on plant-based proteins for people to get their requirements of protein and calcium and so on. And the meat business isn't so sure that that's a good idea.
So what would be as far as plant-based proteins that we're talking about, this would be like legumes, and what kind of examples are they offering?
They haven't really offered anything. And in the past food guides, they have talked more about the need to consume more pulses. And I guess that would also include even the tofu-based meats. And as we know, there is a growing industry to develop plant-based meats that maybe will look like a hamburger or will look like a steak that was even printed in a 3D printer.
So is that the same kind of protein that you would get from having a hamburger or a steak or a piece of chicken?
Not according to the dietitians. Animal-based proteins contain amino acids, and they contain the complete 21 amino acids that you need. The plants can't always provide that kind of thing. Plus, you need to eat a whole lot more than you might say from getting a 3-ounce steak or a quarter pounder. So people are a little bit concerned about it. But I think also Health Canada is concerned about the fat levels that you might be finding in meat. But science is also saying not all fat is bad fat.
So I guess there's still a little bit of discussion here about just how much protein you need relative to the calories and the fat. I mean, but as far as having the complete protein, I can remember my own mother saying if you were having baked beans, you should have bread with it just to get the complete amino acid profile.
Right. Plus all the other additional nutrients that are found in meat. You know, if you eat pork, you're going to get your vitamin B requirements. If you eat beef, you're going to get iron, you're going to get protein, you're going to get zinc. And particularly for children and women, those are very essential nutrients needed for growth and for maintenance of good health.
So is there some concern then that consumers might be misled into thinking the two are just interchangeable?
Yes, I think there is. And most of us nowadays don't have any nutrition education. And sadly enough, a lot of doctors at the family practice don't have a lot of nutrition education either. So in fact, Dairy Farmers of Canada has been visiting family physicians across Canada, and they plan to keep this up for about 3 years just to remind them about the importance of a balanced diet.
So the dairy farmers are being fairly proactive about this. Are the other livestock groups getting involved with this process?
Yes, they will. Canada Beef will be involved. I believe Alberta or the pork producers will as well. And they're also urging producers at the grassroots level to get involved in the consultations, because these are public consultations that Health Canada is putting out there. And so they are going to be looking for a well-reasoned response to what they're saying. And they can provide some, I think, good solid information just from the public point of view.
I guess there's always a concern that, the livestock sector is viewed as having a vested interest in this. They're just trying to protect their interests. But there is some science behind this as well, isn't there not?
Oh, yes, there certainly is. And there are a number of nutritionists who are studying the nutrient density that you require from meat. You know, you can eat a lot less meat to get the same benefit rather than eating, say, 7 helpings of spinach to get your iron and your calcium. Or in the case of some of the grains, you'd need to eat many bowls of cereal to get some of that same nutrition. And people just won't do that.
So how far along is Health Canada in this revision process?
They're just in the consultation phases now. And, of course, things always move a lot more slowly than we expect. So the draft regulations are coming out next year, and then there'll be a full release expected in 2019. And my understanding is this isn't going to be the old-style food guide where it would tell you to eat so many servings of different foods. It's going to be a little more outcome-based. But they want people on the meat side to understand some foods are not interchangeable. And so if you look at the food guide and it says 3 helpings of protein per day, they may not be defining specifically how much of that food should come from meat and how much is fine if you have a bowl of lentil soup.
Well, thanks, Barb, for bringing us this story, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you down the road as it develops.
Yes.
Barb Duckworth writes for The Western Producer. She's based in Calgary, and you can read more about this on producer.com. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rantz. In a few minutes, we'll be getting an update from Bruce Burnett on crop conditions and markets. But first, we're talking to Shannon Van Rays of the Manitoba Cooperator, who recently toured Manitoba's most northern farming areas with Keystone Agricultural Producers. She's here to tell us about some of the unique features and challenges that go with farming in Manitoba's north. Hi, Shannon, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So how did this tour come about?
The tour came about because Keystone Agricultural Producers generally holds district meetings in the fall, which is when farmers, of course, have the most free time, but it's not when you get to see the most agriculture. So this year they wanted to do something a little different and have a northern summer tour and check out districts 10, 11, and 12 and see how things, you know, operate during the season.
So this gave them a chance to actually talk to farmers.
Yes.
Directly.
A lot of it was going to farms. Not every farmer could come in and meet us, but some did, which was great. So it was a combination of farm tours, a backyard barbecue that a lot of people made, you know, just 45 minutes to run in, say what they had on their mind, eat a burger, and run back to the farm. So it was a great opportunity for myself and for Keystone to just touch base and really get a feel for the area.
So where all did you go?
I think the better question is, where didn't we go? It was a very intense tour. I think sometimes you forget how big the province is. We all know it's big, but to actually go out there and see it from above is a different kind of story. So to save time, we flew. We left from St. Andrews about 5 a.m. We went to Swan River to pick up Kelvin Gust, which is the representative for the area for CAP. Then we flew to the Paw, spent some time there, flew back to Swan River to tour some farms in that area. Then we flew to Dauphin, where we spent the night, and the next day we toured Dauphin, then flew to Arborg and back to St. Andrews. So we covered a lot of ground.
So when I think of the Paw, I think of fishing. I mean, I know there are farmers up there, but you don't really associate that with being a major farming area in the province. But what did you see when you got into those areas north of Swan River?
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because as we were flying into the Paw, the pilot said, I had no idea there was farms up here. And this is a fellow who flies north fairly often. And when you're on the ground driving into the Paw, you don't see farmland. You see, you know, advertisements for fishing lodges, and you see a lot of boreal forest. But there are about 25, 26, if you're pushing it, maybe 27 farmers in the area. They farm about 80,000 acres. And what's remarkable about the Paw, and maybe a little unique, is that it should be, for all intents and purposes, underwater. And after World War II, there was a government project to make that arable land. And at the time, the government said, we'll take care of the water, you take care of the farming. So, you know, you do have to kind of check yourself when you're there and realize that this is, in some ways, a fragile area, but also a thriving area. This year, of course, almost 95% of the acres aren't seeded, and that's because of excess moisture. So
they're not exactly staying on top of the water issue.
They are not. They're doing their best. There's a series of pumping systems. Up until, I think, the 80s, it was a gravity-run system. Now it runs on pumps, but that's causing problems of its own. Mostly that it would seem the provincial government doesn't want to keep paying for this. Last year it was over $1 million to keep those pumps running. Now that said, some years it's only 50,000. It does depend on the weather. And in upcoming editions of the Manitoba Cooperator, we'll bring you more information and also check Manitoba Cooperator online. But there are some challenges with the pumping. The excess moisture is growing. When the moisture comes, is changing, and government attitudes to pumping is also, you know, at a crossroads.
So these farmers are certainly feeling some pressure. Then they're kind of caught in the middle of these changing dynamics.
They certainly are, and they did in the 1990s get a settlement from Manitoba Hydro, because some of the water fluctuations that have troubled them are due to hydroelectric stations. So that money is in a trust fund, and it's already going to support some of the pumping. So these farmers are putting their money where their mouths are. They are putting money towards the pumping. The municipality, of course, also puts money towards the pumping. People who live in the Paw or in Apaskwayak Cree Nation, right across the way there, they don't want to be underwater either. But where this goes, that remains to be seen. There's certainly a lot of questions.
So that's one of the stories that you're working on as a result of this tour. What are some of the other things that came up along the way?
Well, there's certainly lots of interesting items. Another one that stood out is hemp production around Dauphin. It's really a flourishing industry there right now. The cooler climate seems to help. And while it's cooler, they also have, you know, just fantastic sunlight. I think it's around 16 hours and 44 minutes at the peak per day. So that's pretty impressive. But there's opportunities hemp producers aren't cashing in on, and they would like to. Most notably, with the pending legalization of cannabis, they would like to be able to sell the cannabinoids as a separate product from the hemp. And right now, they can't do that. Health Canada regulates hemp. You either have a fiber license or a seed license. You could have both, but there's no way to harvest the cannabinoids, and that's really a sought-after pharmaceutical product.
And those aren't the elements of hemp that would make you high. This is something else. It's a nutraceutical, or what is
correct
that?
There's I think about 50 cannabinoids or CBDs in hemp. Hemp has no THC or tetrahydrocannabinol. That's not present, and in fact it's tested randomly to ensure it's not present. But many people, some of the applications of cannabis currently is for anti-seizure medication for children, so you don't want THC in that. So hemp would, on the surface, obviously more research needs to be done, be an excellent substitute for that. But right now, Health Canada doesn't have that license, and there is lobbying going on to change that, and it's something farmers in that area are certainly interested in.
So it sounds like you've got a few things to work on in the next few weeks.
I certainly do. Some other interesting topics. We looked at quinoa. There's a fly-in breakfast club, and bears are a problem in Arburg this year. So, you know, keep an eye on the Manitoba Cooperator. There's going to be lots of great stuff coming out of this.
Thanks for joining us this morning, Shannon.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Shannon Van Ray writes for the Manitoba Cooperator. You can read more about the tour and some of the stories she's working on in upcoming issues of the Manitoba Cooperator or at manitobacooperator.ca. Next up on Between the Rows, we have Bruce Burnett, Glacier Farm Media's Director of Weather and Markets Information. He's on deck to bring us up to date with the crop conditions and markets. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
So what's it looking like out there? Are there any new developments on the crop front?
Well, really, it's been one of those times of the year when not a lot really does happen. We are looking for, of course, the USDA report later this week on August the 10th. And that's probably going to be the main factor driving things rather than any weather conditions or market news until then.
Has there been any harvest activity so far?
Yeah, certainly harvest activities underway in the southern prairies, mostly winter wheat and maybe some winter rye as well being harvested. But that's along the U.S. border areas in the three prairie provinces. The main part of the spring wheat harvest in the south probably won't start for about another week to 10 days. So certainly the harvest is looming, though, in a lot of areas. And south of the border, we're seeing spring wheat harvest gain some considerable momentum now.
So we're likely to have a fairly prolonged harvest season. I mean, the spring planting didn't go smoothly in some areas.
Yes, that's right. Again, from our crop tour, the variability in the crop included the growth stages. And certainly in some of the later planted crops, especially in the north, we're still a long way from harvest. And so really, when we look at it, the south may be, again, complete harvest before some farmers get started in the northern areas of the prairies. But that's not really that atypical, but certainly does spread out harvest when you do have some later planted crops in the north.
So as far as market conditions, I mean, has there been any softening of the Canadian dollar?
The Canadian dollar peaked out a little bit over 80 cents and has softened back into the 78 to 79 cent range, which again is still considerably higher than it was a few months ago. Really, I think we've probably seen the peak of the dollar here for the short term, at least anyway, without any new economic information on the Canadian front. There's probably going to be a slackening off of the dollar here. So that's supportive, again, for Canadian dollar prices in commodities, especially that farmers grow.
So based on what you're seeing happening in the markets right now and the fact that we're just starting to get into harvest, is this a good year for people to be shipping stuff in right off the combine, or is it a better year to store it?
Well, certainly I think if one hasn't been priced on the wheat, let's say wheat or canola, you gauge the opportunities at harvest here, but we would expect the basis to weaken a little bit as we go into the harvest season. But prices really still remain quite strong, so I would recommend at least catching up in terms of your sales progress off the combine here this year. A lot will depend on what we see in the report this week and subsequent reports from USDA in terms of how this spring wheat situation is going to play out. So again, storing some for later on as well is a good recommendation. So again, get priced up off the combine and then possibly wait again for a market rally post-harvest here in the prairies.
Well, thanks for coming in, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Burnett is Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. That's all we have for you this week on Between the Rows. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. I'm your host, Laura Rantz.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Between the Rows. Our goal at Bayer is to continue to progress our lineup of high-performing seed and crop protection solutions so that we can meet specific grower needs like yours. Because when it comes to your farm, Bayer is with you from beginning to end. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com. Or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.